each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
And good Monday afternoon. This is Mary Hallin Fiorito. I am the Cardinal Francis George Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C., along with the DeNicola Center for Ethics and Culture at the University of Notre Dame. And it is my privilege to be with you, as I am most Mondays, sitting in for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. A good start to the week. It's beautiful outside. There's been a little bit of the lessening of the restrictions on residents of Illinois and many of the other states. Most importantly, I think to our listeners, it looks like there will be able to be churches open again, still waiting for some specific directives from the Archdiocese of Chicago that would allow at least 10 people to be in a church building at any given time, would allow presumably for a funeral mass or a wedding if 10 or less people were present. So that's great news. I know many people have been watching Mass either on Facebook Live or on EWTN or any other number of places, Mass for shut-ins, but there's nothing like being in the presence of the Lord personally in the tabernacle, even if we can't receive. So let's continue to pray for that intention, but especially to pray for all those who've been exposed to coronavirus, who have it, and who have lost loved ones, because that number grows every single day. And let's pray that as the weather turns warmer, people continue to take the health directives seriously. Well, speaking of taking the law seriously, I am very pleased to have with me today the former sheriff of Lake County, Mark Curran. Sheriff Curran served Lake County from 2006 until just this last election cycle, where he lost by less than 100 votes. And I know Sheriff will correct me on that if I'm wrong. But Sheriff Curran, welcome. Thank you for coming back again on the show.
Okay.
It's pleasure to have you. How many votes did you lose by? I know that it was a nail biter.
137.
That's terrible.
Out of 250,000.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Sure.
I was up by 1,000 on election night.
Right, I remember that. And so I went to bed thinking you'd won. And you and my friend Congressman Dan Lipinski, I went to bed thinking you'd both won, and woke up in the morning to a very different scenario. So, but we think the Lord has bigger and better plans for you. So, I wanted to have you on to talk about a couple of different things, because you've been in the news lately, tying together the law and the coronavirus and religious freedom. So, I couldn't think of anyone right now who sums up all three of those topics better than you, Sheriff. So, So explain to us, you did an interview with another radio station, WBBM, about, I believe it was right before Easter, correct?
Right.
Yeah, and it was about trying to, as I mentioned on the outset, keep churches open at least for some limited sacramental services for Catholics, primarily confession, but also for at least 10 people or less to be in the church at any given time to pray. And you know, it's funny. I thought it was a fairly kind of straightforward message you were giving, but boy, you got backlash over that, didn't you?
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. Explain a little bit about the interview, if you could, for our listeners who might not have heard it.
Okay. So I didn't really seek out an interview. I just posted. Does anybody know where I can?
Right. I saw that. You posted on Facebook.
Yeah. Does anybody know where I can go to confession?
Right. A little crowd.
Then there were a bunch of responses.
Right.
Suggestions, you know, and most of them were to go out to the Rockford Diocese or to go up to the Kenosha Diocese.
Right.
I think St. John Cantius was doing some like where you don't get out of your car.
Right, exactly.
And so then the reporter calls me, and I said, yeah, you know, I don't understand why, you know, why the grocery store is a essential, but the, you know, our churches are not.
Right.
And, you know, that was about it, and I didn't really think anything of it.
Right.
And then the reporter, his name is Bernie Tafoya. He's a
WBBM, right? Very well.
Yeah,
very seasoned, long-term reporter there, yeah.
Right. He's a St. Leo grad, you know.
Right.
Yeah. And he called Cardinal Supich, or maybe saw him, and Cardinal Supich said, well, and he's got him quoted as mentioning my name, too, saying that, you know, there's nothing magical about what we do, and that we need to keep people healthy and safe, and listen to science, and not think that the church has some superpowers.
Right.
And so that left it at that, and then I guess Michael Voorhees wrote a story on it, and some other people wrote stories on it.
Yeah, different Catholic press picked it up, because I think out of context, I think what the cardinal said, I have the quote up here in front of me, Sheriff, is religion is not magic where we just say prayers and think things are going to change. God gave us a brain and the gift of intelligence, and we have to use it at this moment. So it sounds, you know, it's interesting because I'll just read here from the story for the listeners. As for those, including Republic Senate candidate Mark Curran, who believes the church should have found safe ways to have in-person masses, the cardinal replied. So it seems to have been either a direct question to the cardinal about you or, you know, at least a response that refers to you indirectly, that religion is not magic. And, you know, in a sense, I kind of found myself, you know, trying to defend the cardinal at least partially. You know, he's right, of course, right? So we have to take precautions. And what I think perhaps he was trying to say was, you know, don't be foolish if you're going to go. You know, I have a priest friend, actually, who's one of the 24 priests who has been trained to go and anoint COVID victims when they're dying. So he has to go. He has a very strict regimen every day. He has to take his temperature 3 times a day. He has, like, a hazmat suit he has to wear when he goes to the hospital. You know, he's taking all the necessary precautions, but yet he also believes in the power of prayer and the power of sacramental anointing, or he wouldn't be going to do it, right? So I believe what the cardinal meant to say, at least this is what I hope he meant to say, was that, you know, our faith combines faith and reason and faith and science. They're not opposed to each other. And but it came out in a way that sounded very different. I think I'm sad for the cardinal because I don't think his words were measured enough or nuanced enough that it opened itself up to him looking, like saying the sacraments didn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, Mary, I don't know where you want this to go, but I could tell you things about this cardinal that at this point, you know, all my prayers are that at some point he's removed.
Well, yeah, and that's probably not the I'd really rather the focus of the interview be on you and your good work. I'm a little disappointed. I think other places have found ways at least to keep the church buildings open. And you know what? You talk about backlash. This was kind of funny. I put when Wisconsin put up its executive orders, it was the governor of Wisconsin, they specifically said that houses of worship could remain open and were essential services. Houses of worship were essential, whereas the Illinois order did not. Governor Pritzker's governor did not designate religious institutions, houses of worship, mosques, synagogues, churches. None of them were designated as essential. Now, Mitch McConnell had a really good piece in the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times, one of the two, where he said, technically, we don't have to say that they're essential because the First Amendment has already said they're essential. It's part of it's the religious freedom contracts and the right to worship are enshrined in the Constitution and the First Amendment. Technically, they didn't need to say that. However, the fact that they weren't enumerated has become a problem. And I said something like, I don't understand why marijuana dispensaries are open and doing booming business, by the way. That has been all over the news. The marijuana dispensaries can barely keep up with the demand for marijuana during this time of lockdown. If they can be open, why can't I go sit in my parish church, you know, with my husband 30 feet from another person you know, wash my hands going in, wash my hands going out. And I think that's probably safer than my standing very close to another person in a marijuana. And the backlash I got, people called me a prude, and people said I was being cruel to people who needed marijuana for medicinal purposes, which wasn't at all what I was saying. I said, great, you know, you've got your, you're essential. Good for you. I don't see why, you know. But one woman said, if you want to be close to your Jesus, then you, you know, you can do that at home. Another person who, former employee of the Archdiocese of Chicago, I'm sad to say, said, you can pray to God anywhere. And I said, don't you understand? Don't you believe? I mean,
yeah,
this is
I'm
why,
you
know, this is why we genuflect when we go into a church, because we believe that Jesus is truly present in the Eucharist. And so I do believe that this has raised some pretty significant religious liberty issues. And I just wanted to kind of bounce some of those, as an attorney, bounce some of those off you.
Yeah, so what I would say is, so first of all, yes and no. I mean, you know, we're Catholics. We believe in the supernatural, and the supernatural is in the presence of Christ, you know, in the sacrament. So there is magic, quote unquote, if that's...
Right.
So I'm sorry, that's why, you know, people, you know, have Eucharistic adoration. That's why people like me try to get to Mass every day. You know, that's why, because we recognize that there is quote unquote magic graces, if you want to, you know, play those games.
Right.
That come from the Eucharist.
Right.
So there's number one. Number two is that our eternal souls are more important than anything on earth.
Right.
Number three is that the science on this is, and, you know, I've studied this really well, because it's, you know, when you're running for a national office and it's all that's on anybody's mind, you should know it pretty well what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is sometimes, you know, people come from different professions.
Right.
Like you could be a nurse.
Right.
And you could have an emotional, you know, and you're wired to be, you know, emotional, and that's where your strengths are in nurturing.
Right.
But by the same token, you may not understand statistics.
Yes.
You may not understand economics, and you may not understand, you know, forecasting and all the rest. So
right.
The fact that you have one skill doesn't mean you have all of them.
Right.
And so, you know, right there, I can tell you that there's so much going on with regards to the quarantine that is horrible.
Yeah.
You know, I have a 15-year-old at home, you know, and I just was looking at a story of a young man that committed suicide recently. And the dad, who was a West Point grad and everything, was talking about how bad isolation is for
mm-hmm.
kids.
Yeah.
And... So historically, what was paramount was what's in the best interest of children.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way our society had looked. But in this abortive culture that we live in right now, children are pretty irrelevant.
Right.
You know, who cares about children building up the immunity for the rest of their lives?
Yeah.
That is so critical.
Right.
Who cares about children having a childhood? Who cares about children being able to play sports? Who cares about, you know, the fact that in Lake County, we have all these schools because of the No Child Left Behind.
Right.
That these kids don't even go on their computer.
Right.
They don't even sign in for the day. And they're already automatically going to be elevated to the next grade.
Yeah.
So where are we going to be long-term as a result of the reaction that we had to this virus, number one?
Right. And not every family has access, sorry to interrupt you, to a home computer. That has been a real issue in some communities where not every family has a laptop for every child.
Or even if they do,
right.
Even if they do, a lot of times they just choose not to sign on.
Right. And it's so that,
And there's no consequences to that.
Okay.
And so, you know, what the other thing that gets lost is that nobody has suggested, you know, nobody that truly understands the historical viruses and everything else, and it's basically has studied this for a living, thinks that there's any real gain to quarantine other than to flatten the curve.
Right. Other than for those people with comorbidities or, you know, compromised immune systems.
Okay, right, exactly. Yeah. So that's a separate issue.
Right.
But ultimately, the goal of the quarantine, where we quarantine healthy people, is to flatten the curve.
Right.
So everybody says, well, look at Sweden. They have more deaths. You know what? They build up herd immunity, and they're done.
Yeah.
So the next time this virus comes back to all those surrounding countries, those people will continue to get it, and then they'll have to take, you know, the same actions potentially that they've taken already and what have you.
Right.
And then in the end, they may have more people get sick from the virus than Sweden did.
Yes.
Because ultimately, the objective is one of two things, and that is obviously is herd immunity or a vaccine, but we have no reason to believe that a vaccine is coming at any time for long, long time,
no.
way beyond what the economy could be able to.
Right. I was listening to a story go ahead.
Right. So once our hospitals are equipped to handle, people contacting this virus, then, you know, we should be open for business.
Right.
If we're shutting down McCormick Place.
Right. Wasn't that something? It was built up to take 1,000 COVID victims and wound up having next to no one.
Right. So, you know, maybe people aren't going to believe this, but I don't really, if I were to die from coronavirus tomorrow, I'd be much more worried about what's the status of my soul.
Right.
And we know that early forecasts were that 85% of the people that came in contact with this virus would have no symptoms, essentially.
Okay.
They'd be asymptomatic and they'd never know it. Now there's been testing on correctional facilities.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, every single person in the facility had the virus and nobody had any symptoms. So we're now thinking that the death rate from coronavirus in the U.S. probably around 0.25%.
Yeah.
So we killed the economy, and we lived in fear.
Right.
And the devil, two things the devil speaks to, and that's fear and isolation.
Right, exactly. And both of those out in abundance. But
right.
Well, we're going to take our first break, Sheriff Kern. So when we come back, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about, because I know you're in the middle of a campaign, and while we don't endorse or oppose candidates on the show, I would like to ask you a couple of questions about, you know, what your program is, what it would be, especially vis-a-vis issues that are important to the Catholic community. So if I could indulge you for hanging through through the break, we'll be right back, and listeners will be continuing our conversation with former sheriff and now
Pray the
Senate
Chaplain
candidate
of Divine
Mark
Mercy with us at 3 p.m. Central Time. Streamed live from St. Stanislaus Kostka Church, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Go to the St. Stanislaus Kostka Church Facebook page and pray with us daily at 3 p.m.
Have mercy on us and on the whole world.
During this COVID-19 virus pandemic, offering you prayer and inspiration through your faith.
The winds of change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Because of the unprecedented COVID-19 virus pandemic, the Providence Soup Kitchen at St. Stan's needs your immediate help. The Soup Kitchen is asking for your donations of water, juice boxes, individual food servings, hand sanitizers, and Lysol. The Providence Soup Kitchen at St. Stan's is operating regular hours during this pandemic. The Soup Kitchen is operated by the Daughters of St. Mary Providence from the basement of St. Stanislaus Kostka Church, which serves over 21,000 meals per year. To offer your help, please call Sister Darlene at 773-870-2435. That number again is 773-870-2435. 2435. Thank you.
And welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Listener Supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. And I have the honor of being joined this hour by Mark Kern, who is the former sheriff of Lake County, Illinois, and then also a candidate for United States Senate. He will be running against Richard Durbin in November. And Sheriff Kern, I want to talk to you. You would have real inside information on this particular topic in a way that many others wouldn't. I've seen a lot of very troubling numbers coming out from the Cook County Jail about the spread of the coronavirus. Can you, as a former sheriff, explain how, I guess I could guess about how the virus would get into a facility like a jail, which is by definition sheltered in place. But do you have any insights into how it spread so quickly? I think there's been a couple of deaths in some of the prisons too, some of the state prisons in Illinois. Could you speak to that a little bit?
Sure. So, jail and even an IDOC population is constantly changing. You know, people make bond, they get out, their sentence is finished, new people come in, and you're not in lockdown 24/7. You know, you have periods of the day where you're out in general population, they're sitting around watching TV, maybe playing basketball, what have you. We know this virus spreads very easily, so you know, you could see how an entire pod could get the virus like that, bang. And then you have correctional officers that go from floor to floor, and you have inmate workers that go from floor to floor, and then, you know, nurses that go from floor to floor. So you can see how the virus starts, and inmates are transferred.
Sure.
He's on the fourth floor one day, he's on the third floor the next week. So it's real easy how it, you know, how that type of would be ripe for spread.
Right. You know, I occasionally volunteer with Little Sisters of the Poor at their home in Lincoln Park. And about, I don't know, three, four weeks ago, I had called Sister Carolyn, who's sort of the head of the volunteers, and, you know, just to check and see how they were doing. And, you know, we were trying to entertain some ideas of how we might bring maybe an entertainment program in for the residents. And she said, absolutely not. We can't have any volunteers in here. We can't have anyone in to do a little performance for the residents. She said, we are taking every possible precaution. All the sisters are wearing PPE, you know, the protective gloves and masks. All of our workers, the only people who are allowed to come in right now are our employees. No family, nothing. And she said, you know, we're letting people wave to their family, loved ones from the windows, but that is as far as we are going. And still the virus got in. They lost, at last I heard, they lost 4 residents at the Little Sisters of the Poor in Lincoln Park, and 11 more residents had diagnosed as positive. So, you know, you see in some of these enclosed, establishments with vulnerable populations on top of it, you know, you really do, you can, how quickly it spreads, it's quite frightening. And then, you know, I have a friend who works at a different facility up on the North Shore, and she said, even after all of this, you would be shocked how many family members actually complain to us. They tell us things like, oh, I don't know anybody who has this virus, and I'm healthy, I don't need to wear a mask. She said, the biggest part of the problem, she said, the employees all know, you know, that they have to scrub in and scrub out. And she said, it's some of these family members who, just because they've never met anybody with COVID, thinks that there's going to be no COVID in our nursing home, and they just had their first death. So that's frustrating when you get, you know, on the one hand, people who are being very cavalier about it. And then on the other hand, as you were speaking of earlier, people not perhaps using the best scientific models, you know, to direct what our responses should be as a state, as a government.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like you said, there's essentially three circles. One, you know, I care about coronavirus and handling it the best and safest way possible. Two, I care about my constitutional liberties, and three, I care about the economic consequences of this virus.
Right, which are already significant and are probably going to be greater. But you know,
I don't think people have any idea. I really don't.
Really,
that's why I think that.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I think it's going to turn. You look at these polls.
Mm-hmm.
I think people are just in the dark right now.
Yeah.
I think that when they see the economic devastation, especially that Illinois is going to see as a result of this virus, I think that ultimately they're going to be wondering, what the heck were we thinking to do this?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
why is the county down south, you know, closed all this time, so that a pizza guy has to go out of business, so now he has to go on aid because he can't afford to support his family.
Right, even with takeout orders, he can't keep up. He can't, you know, because most restaurants, you know, operate on razor thin margins to begin with, as do most grocery stores. Now, grocery stores, of course, have had the benefit, you know, the kind of happy accident of having to actually hire more workers because there is such a demand.
Right.
But, you know, what's been interesting to see, though, is that there does seem to be such a patchwork of applications to these stay-home orders. Like, for example, Colorado's revised order, who was from a Democratic governor who is openly gay, says he doesn't presume to apply his order to churches. But he urges them. He doesn't instruct them. He didn't mandate them. He didn't require them. But he urged them to do the virtual services and to do the social distancing guidelines. But it wasn't, it didn't presume to say you are not essential services. So it took a much more, and again, from, you know, a Democratic governor, it took.
Well, here's what I think that.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. You please go.
So this is, I think, why a lot of people have a problem with our archdiocese and our shepherd, if you will. So he's always praising Democrats, you know, and most recently he was praising J.B. Pritzker's order to that keep people home, and that any comparison to J.B. Pritzker's order to Nazi Germany, we strongly condemn and
but
you know,
who did that? Where did that come from?
Well, it was Cardinal Supich.
I know that he said that. I know he tweeted that out, and that got quite.
Well,
a good
I think one person out of thousands had a Nazi sign at the rally. You know,
okay.
And they were comparing They were comparing to the orders. So the problem is that, you know, he pretends that he doesn't hear that our president is called a Nazi and Hitler almost every day.
Right.
And every comment that he makes shows his bias towards left-wing politics, despite the fact that, you know, somebody tweeted right below that a tweet from Pritzker saying that we need to go after these religious institutions that won't be providing abortions to all their people and that, you know, their employees, and it won't recognize the transgender rights of, you know, all Americans.
Well, you know, that's another good point, that you raised.
So if you look at, you know, the Democrats ran the Catholic Church out of the adoption business in Illinois. They would have no problem with destroying religious liberty. And, you know, from all appearances, this guy's totally in bed with the Democratic Party. And he promotes them on every chance he can, and he does nothing to defend the religious liberty of the Catholic Church.
Well, you know what? I thought another thing where there was surprising backlash to me was over the conference call, which, you know, 500 people were invited. I was invited to it myself. I wasn't able to join. But the conference call that was held on Sunday between President Trump and Archbishop Dolan and Archbishop Gomez and another number of Catholic, significant Catholic influencers and heads of organizations, about the fact that the president very wisely had included religious nonprofits in this CARES Act and the Paycheck Protection Program in particular. And the number of things I saw on Twitter, like, you know, this is, you know, the Catholic Church getting in bed with the Trump administration, and this is terrible because, you know, Cardinal Dolan, I think, quite appropriately thanked the president for making sure that, you know, religious institutions like our schools and our other smaller Catholic nonprofits could be included in those PPPs because, you know, I mean, I know my parish school operates on a shoestring budget, and just 3 months without tuition getting paid can mean, you know, the end of careers for a lot of our teachers. And I know a large number of Catholic schools in the Chicago area who applied for those grants. And so I would think that anyone who is in a position of authority in any diocese where their schools got grants should be praising the president for making sure that they were included. Now, you know, the president speaks in a lot of hyperboles. He uses a lot of, you know, very colorful language. And, you know, you just have to, you know, when he talks about himself being the best all the time, he's a very superlative speaker in many respects. But I think, you know, that's just who he is. And I think we just all have to kind of realize that this is the man that we're dealing with. But I don't think it was wrong for Cardinal Dolan to say we had a good conversation. He was very sympathetic to the needs of the Catholic Church. He was also aware of the number of services that we provide. And can you imagine just for example, in the Archdiocese of Chicago, if we had to close our grade schools, where would Lori Lightfoot put all those kids? More than 100,000 children. where would she put them?
Right.
It would create a real problem.
Yeah. What the other problem is, I think probably like 80% of weekly churchgoers in the Catholic faith voted for President Trump. And, you know, people that self-identify as conservative are, the difference in terms of the amount of charitable giving is absolutely ridiculous. Almost all of the charitable giving comes from those that self-identify as conservatives. So, you know, I think a lot of wealthy, faithful Catholics feel that this cardinal has waged war on them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think there's going to be consequences in the, the envelopes. And,
I think that's I think that's already happened, unfortunately. I feel for many pastors who have staff who don't work for a lot of money to begin with, and now are facing layoffs and furloughs, and it's going to be, like you say, I think right now the combination of the stimulus and some initial unemployment money are keeping families afloat, but as you say, 2 and 3 months down the line, it may look very different for a lot of families. I have a neighbor who volunteers at helping to coordinate the food collections for Catholic Charities in our squadron of the Archdiocese, our section of the Archdiocese, rather. And she says the shelves are almost bare. Like she said, we have got to get more food into those canned food, into those pantries, because the need has become almost overnight, doubled.
Right. So here's the reality also.
Yes.
Donald Trump is Donald Trump is a extremely flawed person. But, why, like so many people, believe that God chose Donald Trump? And he chose an incredibly sinful man, as he has throughout history.
Yeah.
But he chose a man who's got courage on a level that maybe he would have had a hard time finding the next guy that would have had that kind of courage.
Yeah.
And that's what we needed. And ultimately, when you look at you look at what's at stake, the Democrats, so many of them are saying that, religious institutions that don't perform gay marriages or don't do this should lose their status,
right?
Tax exempt status. Others are saying that they should just be out of business and what have you.
Yeah.
So we have a president who has suffered more than any president in history, probably.
Right.
And he has put these justices on the bench that will protect religious liberty so that I, as a Catholic, don't have to make a decision between earning a living and keeping my faith.
Right.
Because that's ultimately what many on the left want to have happen. They want me to be able to forego my faith and essentially maybe forego my eternal soul.
Right.
For the sake of being able to make a living, and that's not something that in America we should ever have to do.
No.
So I don't, I think that I really think that this cardinal stands alone. I mean, Cardinal Dolan has given great praise to President Trump, when appropriate. Almost all of them have, know what I mean?
I think they've rightly criticized him where we feel it's not compatible with gospel, but when he has done the right thing, I think it's right to praise him.
Right, exactly.
I mean, in the same way President Obama did so much damage to particularly religious liberty and, Catholic education things, and certainly the pro-life cause suffered tremendously under the Obama administration.
President Obama was in favor, he's twice sponsored the Infant Born Alive Act in the Illinois General Assembly.
He
sponsored it at a time when he couldn't get a single Democrat to go along with it.
I know.
So President Obama had an agenda that was demonic on a level that I don't know people can actually grasp. But he went through essentially without criticism from so much of the church.
That was a warm embrace. Astounding. And, I actually, this will show my age, but I testified in front of then State Senator Obama on the Illinois partial birth abortion bill. And he could not have been more condescending to me. He could not have been more rude. And I was there representing the Archdiocese as a young attorney. And I was appalled and this is when he was kind of a, backbencher nobody who hardly ever showed up to vote anyway. But boy, he showed up for that, to kind of try and goad me a little bit. And then, of course, when the ACLU's attorney got up there, he was fawning all over her. I mean, it was just, it was a joke of a hearing. And but I'll never forget it. I'll never forget the manner in which I was spoken to, just as another human being, but particularly as a representative of the church. I thought he was just he behaved appallingly. And but then, you know, what was interesting, the way people were comparing Cardinal Dolan inviting the president to watch their virtual mass that they have from St. Patrick's Cathedral this past Sunday, and the president agreed, I'd love to watch virtually. People were comparing that to the outrage that was shown by many Catholics when Notre Dame gave Barack Obama an award after he had right. voted to veto partial birth abortion, after he had voted against infant born alive. You know, I thought right. it was very telling.
So,
yes.
Yeah. So I was a Democrat. You know that.
Oh, no, that's, oh, you know what? I had forgotten that. I had forgotten
yeah.
that in your former life. Yes.
My objective is to be Catholic.
Right.
You know, and people say, what's your discernment? You know what I mean? You know, why would you get involved in an ecclesiastical issue? You know, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so my discernment is to love and serve the Lord, nothing more and nothing less.
Right. That's
so that's
beautiful.
My daily.
Yeah.
That's my daily discernment. It's not, I should only talk about these things because they're, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I was a Democrat because essentially, you know, I saw it. I mean, there's a guy at Medline Corporation in Lake County, Illinois. You know, they build all these factories over in China. They don't want to pay a fair wage to the American worker. They screw them. They get cheap products. And they give all their money to the left, which is the crony the side where the crony capitalist is,
right.
and the American worker gets screwed over. Well, historically, that wasn't it. It used to be the right.
Right.
We were the party of the Rockefellers and what have you.
Right.
But it's flipped.
It has.
Now the, you
yeah.
know, with Trump, you know, we are the party of the blue collar.
Right.
And so, for me, you know, I've never been more at home than I am in the Republican Party right now, just because I am not, you know, to me, there was nothing more distasteful than the old Republican Party, which was basically a country club crowd and didn't really, you know, took advantage of the working class and what have you. So now I think that, you know, we have a message, the pro-life message, number one. And secondly, the economic message that yeah. resonates. We're America first. You know, Catholicism is about subsidiarity. And, you know, we talk about that, you know, we need to start building up the, and also the concept of, you know, Chesterton in terms of distributism. You know, we need that local economies are critical.
Right.
We need to stop shipping all these jobs overseas. We need to stop relying on communist nations that are godless and want to destroy us. And their ultimate goal is to be the world superpower, and they'll go to any demonic length that they possibly can. We need to, you know, we need to bring America back home. And I'm sorry, but, you know, I'm somebody that's been an immigration reform person.
Right. Oh, that's right. That was a very, very strong stand you took when you were sheriff.
Yeah. And I still believe in that. But let me just say this much. There is something special about America.
Right.
And we were founded on natural law. And Catholics, if you don't know what natural law is, you have to know what natural
yes,
law is.
Yes. That's a very important part
a lot of you were
formation,
that's
right.
Right. That's probably why a lot of Catholics are all over the place in terms of what they believe, and they would get upset about Trump, who's clearly a natural law president, and how
right.
important that is. So natural law is more important than almost anything else in our faith. And that's, you know, essentially recognizing that there's a God and we're not God and all the rest. So, you know, what I would say is with immigration, we are a nation that's founded upon natural law, with a Judeo-Christian belief system as its backdrop. Now, the beauty of natural law is it doesn't point to a single faith.
Right.
You know,
I
mean, natural
right.
law.
Anyone can know it just from reason.
Right, exactly. But we can't have people coming into America that would never be able to accept the premises of natural law, because then we no longer become America.
Right.
If we're no longer America, then we no longer have religious liberty.
Right.
We are no longer in a power to defend liberty, religious liberty, and other liberties for other nations around the world.
Correct.
So we have to preserve American heritage.
Right.
We can't, you know, have people coming into this country that have no interest in learning our language, have no interest in adopting, have no interest in what America is about and why it's special. I mean, so the immigration has to be slowed down so that people can assimilate, because America is truly a special nation.
Right.
And, you know, and so that's where I think that, I just, there's so much that if Trump could articulate it better, you know, here's the thing, Omer, you and I can say that he does this and he does that, but if he didn't go to Twitter.
Right.
He had no chance, because this media was going to destroy him.
Right.
And I was, as sheriff, I walked out of that office with almost zero friends. And I can't tell you how many coups were attempted behind my back.
By whom? When you say that, by whom?
There's a family, I'm not going to say their name.
Yeah, you know, you don't have to name them.
You know.
It was like a contingent.
You know them.
Okay, all right.
Okay, you know these people.
All right.
And they would ask to come into my office when I was sheriff to pray with me.
Okay.
And I basically made their career. You know what I mean?
Right.
They didn't have super education and what have you. I promoted them in large part because I trusted them.
Right.
When I was no longer sheriff, they never called me again.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I reached out to them. You know, Catholics were supposed to hold people accountable. So if somebody's in a sinful state,
right?
You just don't not talk to them. You tell them, you know, this is why I have a problem with you.
Right.
And so I sent them an email, you know, saying that.
Yeah, and
I have to say
that is one. If I could just briefly interject, because that is something I think is very admirable about you, Mark, and I've seen you do it previously publicly to say, this is what I said. If there was something, if I was off here, I would like people to help, you know, to hold me accountable. Please tell me where I went wrong so I can discuss it. So I've always really admired that's your approach, that you invite people into dialogue when there's a question about what something you said. So I must say, I've always been a big fan of yours just for that reason alone.
Thank you. So I empathize with President Trump on a unique level, having had that position.
Yeah.
Like I said, so many people use him.
Yeah,
and not for their own game, and they forget that he's a human being. Maybe because he has a sinful nature to him, they don't recognize that he's still a human being, and they think, you know, oh, he's just he's a rough guy that from New Jersey or New York and what have you. And the reality is that he's a person,
yeah,
and he doesn't. And basically, what he's encountered in his first few years is a lot of people that put knives in his back that he was very, very good to. And he's encountered a lot of coups where people thought they were smarter than him, and they were going to, even though he was the duly elected, you know, president, and the people had given the authority to him and not them.
Right.
They tried to operate around him and behind him as though that, you know, and that's, you know, part of that's envy, and it's our fallen nature, but he came into a swamp.
Yes.
And you know, I think he's articulated just how bad it is
when
people stay in Washington 30 years. And they think that the president is irrelevant,
right?
And if they don't like, they're going to be there longer than him, so they're just going to ignore him, continue to try to do what they want to do,
right?
And if he makes any waves, they're going to try to work against him and embarrass him,
yeah.
And you know that's what's transpired, and I get that. I mean, everything that's happened, you know, I almost could have told him to expect it all, but,
right.
I mean, he's survived, and he's, you know, part of the beauty of him is that he doesn't seem to rely on the approval of a lot of people, you know what I mean?
Right.
You know, and that is Catholic.
Which can be, yeah, of course, and a blessing, right? I mean, sometimes
right.
bouncing
Catholic.
Things off people, yeah, can
it's
be a help.
Catholics.
Yeah.
We're called, you know, we're told that if we're doing it right, our faith walk could be a very, very lonely walk.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And in the end, one being is going to pass judgment on your eternal soul.
Yeah.
And really, that's the only one whose opinion that matters.
Yeah.
So quit trying to gain the favor of the world.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, Sheriff Kern, we're going to go into our final break, and then this hour has, this wonderful conversation has flown by. So I'd like to, you know, before we close, get into a couple of your, policy proposals that distinguish you from your opponent, because I think Catholics have an obligation to fully educate themselves on both candidates before they make that decision. So if you can hang on just a couple minutes, we'll go into our final break, and then we'll conclude our conversation, listeners, with Sheriff Mark Kern. Don't go away.
Because of the unprecedented COVID-19 virus pandemic, the Providence Soup Kitchen at St. Stan's needs your immediate help. The soup kitchen is asking for your donations of water, juice boxes, individual food servings, hand sanitizers, and Lysol. The Providence Soup Kitchen at St. Stan's is operating regular hours during this pandemic. The soup kitchen is operated by the Daughters of St. Mary Providence from the basement of St. Stanislaus Kostka Church, which serves over 21,000 meals per year. To offer your help, please call Sister Darlene at 773-870-2435. That number again is 773-870-2435. Thank you. During this COVID-19 virus pandemic, offering you prayer and inspiration through your faith.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy with us at 3 p.m. Central Time, streamed live from St. Stanislaus Kostka Church, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Go to the St. Stanislaus Kostka Church Facebook page and pray with us daily at 3 p.m.
Have mercy on us and on the whole world.
As we sit home or are doing the necessary and often courageous jobs for your family and others, Father Anthony invites you to be with us Sundays, where you will see the English, Spanish, and Polish Masses on the St. Stanislaus Kostka Facebook homepage. St. Stanislaus Kostka Church will keep you updated via flocknote.com or by texting the word Kostka, spelled K-O-S-T-K-A, to 845-76, or via the St. Stanislaus Kostka homepage on Facebook, plus the parish website, ststanschurch.org. Keep listening for more information on Winds of Change, Monday through Friday at noon on AM 750. As always, we ask you to lift your voice to God, our rock and our shelter.
And welcome back. This hour has just flown by. We're having just a wide-ranging and really fascinating conversation with Sheriff Mark Kern. And I can still call you Sheriff, correct? You retain the title even after you've left the office. Is that accurate?
I'm sorry, Mary,
I can still accurately call you Sheriff, yes?
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. That's a title you can keep forever.
Good. That's wonderful. And I should have asked you that at the outset, but I just wanted to make certain. But we've been having a really, wide-ranging and very informative conversation. And as I mentioned at the outset, as we don't on our show endorse or oppose any particular candidates, however, we do delve into issues very specifically and so that Catholic voters can make informed decisions when it comes to their faith, the practice of their faith. And the person you're running against, Richard Durbin, I have to say personally myself, I have tremendous difficulty with, which I did kind of most of the time when he was so supportive of partial birth abortion and did not vote against those bills on a national level. But his most recent treatment of Amy Coney Barrett, who is now a federal district court judge, but at the time was professor of law at the University of Notre Dame, his treatment of her when she was being questioned by the Senate Judiciary Committee, I think hit, frankly, a new low for for politics, and that is saying something, to so viciously grill her on her Catholic faith, and in particular, his very strange question about what kind of Catholic she was. Because I kind of thought there was all kind of, I know theoretically people will joke, oh, I'm a liberal Catholic or I'm a conservative Catholic, but, technically, there's one kind of Catholic. You're Catholic or you're not. And so I found that question, bizarre, certainly just from a theological standpoint. But then secondly, that he would have the nerve to ask that of her publicly. And Sheriff Kern, I know you're going to be debating him, that you're going to be taking on some of these things with him personally. Did you watch those particular hearings? And at the time, what was your reaction to them, if you did watch them?
Yeah, I did, I think she's probably Trump's next pick for the Supreme Court.
So. I would be very disappointed. And listeners, if you don't know Judge Amy Coney Barrett, look up her her biography. She is, I know a couple of my other lawyer friends who teach alongside her at Notre Dame who said she really is probably one of the smartest women they've ever taught with or met in a lifetime. And that's saying something because, you know, Notre Dame at their law school really does have the best and the brightest. But beyond her intellectual gifts, which are significant, she also, as a Catholic, is someone who truly lives out her faith. She has 7 children, one of whom is disabled, 2 of whom were adopted from Haiti. They really, anyone, I happen to know people who are neighbors of theirs who say this, no, they're the real deal. Like if something, you know, you were to lose a member of your family, the Amy would be the first person on your doorstep with a casserole and a plant and asking you what she could do to help you. They really live out their Catholic faith in a very genuine way, and she's very serious about it. And so I thought to sort of put her under the, her faith under and the practice thereof under the microscope like that, I just thought from a judicial standpoint, it was completely inappropriate. I could not see Senator Durbin doing that to a Jew or to a Muslim. What was your reaction when you saw it?
Oh, horrible. Yeah. You know, ultimately, like you said, to be Catholic means to be in communion or to be in agreement with the
right.
tenets of the Catholic
right.
faith.
Correct.
So people don't realize that, but if they're not pro-life, they're, you know, since that's a doctrinal thing that,
right.
that they're not really...
And that's what he was getting
at. They're not really Catholic. What's that?
Right, that's what he was getting at. He wanted to talk about her position on abortion.
Right.
That was the key there for him.
So, I mean, here's what a cesspool it is sometimes. I mean, Tim Durkin's the House Minority Leader in the Illinois House, and when his brother was going through the confirmation process, Durbin led the approval process.
Mm-hmm.
And when I called Jim Durkin to tell him I was running, he said, "Well, you know, Dick Durbin's a really good friend of mine." And so, you know, a lot of times, and he's not.
Oh my goodness,
Jim Durkin's not pro-life, and you know, Paul Shimp, who was a good friend of mine, was ran for Attorney General in Illinois. And he was asked to apply to be a federal judge, and he was on the door, and he got a call from the White House asking him if he would withdraw his name because Durbin wouldn't let him hit the floor. And so, you know, I mean, it's the corruption of the Republican Party in Illinois. It's the corruption of so much, and people that stand for so little other than, you know, what helps line their own pockets. It's really a frustrating process, and Durbin is sneaky enough to make friends across the aisle with the people that are basically willing to sell out for, you know, a few pieces of silver.
Yeah. Well, we look at what happened with Dan Lipinski and his own party, you know, and
right.
I think he voted, 94% of the time he voted with the speaker, and still, because he would not bow at the altar of Planned Parenthood, he was targeted, and I can't tell you how disgraceful I find that.
Yeah, so both parties have their problems. You know, people need to stand for something. Yeah, I'm running on, you know, as I said before, you know, it's basically about, I think the disparity in wealth and income in our country is very, not only unsavory, but it's not sustainable. I think that
okay.
ultimately we're gonna have socialism because of the greed of some people at the top.
Right.
And so I'm trying to stop that.
Yes.
And Durbin is in the party. Durbin has been a promoter of hurting the factory, hurting the little guy, hurting the small businesses, hurting, watching American jobs leave this country, what have you. And, you know, being promoted by the rich guys that sit atop of these American corporations that send mm-hmm. all their business overseas. So that's what I'm fighting on an economic front. And,
okay.
You know, ultimately... To me, as I said before, it's the concept of subsidiarity. You know, charity begins at home. This is
right,
America. This
right.
is our country. We need to take care of our workers.
Right, right. And, you know, and here, isn't it ironic that it seems that when you compare the two of you, it's you who have the greater concern for, and I would argue, a greater knowledge of, just given the number of years you've served as sheriff, the things that drive people into lives of crime, so to speak, and to poverty, which then of course would contribute to a life of crime, is a disintegration of the family. And you and I have talked about this, where remind me of the statistic of the number of men that were incarcerated in the Lake County Jail when you were sheriff who grew up in homes without fathers.
Oh my gosh,
it was an astounding number.
I think it's like 2/3.
I recall it. Yeah, like it being closer to 75%, if not
so it's
higher.
It's higher than any other denominator, any other factor. So addiction to anything, you know, any type of addiction is a much smaller factor than the absence of a father in the house.
Right, and that's so, and that, you know, what I find so frustrating.
Those are national numbers too.
Right, exactly. That's not just specific to Lake County. That actually is across the board, in any major urban area. But yet, it's we both know our friend, our African American pastor friend, Cesar LaFleur, who talks about this all the time in his community, and gives an example of his own family. He's from a family of, I think, 6 or 7. His father was a truck driver. His mother stayed home with them. He said, "We were not wealthy people, but my father went to work every day and my father came home every day. And we knew as boys, there were threshold lines we could not cross." And every one of us graduated from high school, and every one of us waited until we were married to have children, which is another factor that, you know, you see in families. I think they call it the sequence, and it's sort of a pattern of your lifestyle choices that if you make them in a certain order, you have a less than 1% chance of living in poverty. And that sequence is you graduate from high school, you get a job, any job at all, and you wait until you are married, until you have children. If you do those three things in that order, you have a less than 1% chance of ever living in poverty. I mean, it's astounding. And they say, you know, the Asian immigrants to our country have been able to pick that up very quickly. They know that.
Whose policies were those that broke up the American family?
Exactly.
By creating public housing and then making sure that the father couldn't live with the family.
Right.
And you know,
it worked
all Democrat
against
policies.
Yes, it worked against. And you know,
ultimately, you know, a lot of times people, things can be, the subconscious or the unconscious acting in a way that promotes what you want to have happen.
Right.
And whether they intentionally did it or not, their end game always seems to have been dependence on government, not God,
right,
or not family or anything else.
Right. And you know, you can, like you said, you can believe in the natural law and not be a religious person, but you have to, you know, but to recognize that there are natural consequences to behaviors that we take that impact the rest of our lives. So I'm so grateful to you for bringing that natural law concept up, because it is something that you don't hear. So if people want to hear more about your campaign, if they're interested want to learn more about you and what you're doing, where can they go to find that out, Mark?
Yeah, you know, on Facebook, you know, Mark Kern for U.S. Senate, former Lake County Sheriff Mark Kern on Twitter. You know, Elect Kern is our website.
Okay,
electkern.com. You know, we've got a YouTube page. We got everything. So, you know, if they can afford to contribute, you know, that'd be great.
Right.
You know, financially, we're always.
Well, tell me just quickly, how has the whole, you know, shelter in place order affected your campaign? This must be a very interesting time to be running for office.
Yeah, I just, you know, I just got off the phone with somebody who was very religious, Catholic as well, and he said, "Have you consecrated your campaign to Our Lady?" And I said, "You know, I announced on August 15th, and I have." So, you know, the reality is we've had a really hard time making money, but I trust in Our Lady, I trust in our faith.
That's right. It's Mother Teresa that used to say, "God has plenty of money." So, well, Sheriff Kern, we thank you. God bless
you.
Good luck with your campaign. Thank you for being with us. Listeners,
appreciate
have a blessed and wonderful week. Thank you again for joining us. This is Mary Fiorito. I've been sitting in for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed.